Thank you for that, and welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you, coast to coast and around the world on the American Forces Radio Network. It's 9:40 on a Tuesday. We check in with our friend Karen Lyle, who will co-host this segment with me from SailSportTalk.com. Karen, I saw Christopher Cross is coming to Petaluma. We were just talking about Petaluma in the earlier segment. He's coming to the Mystic Theater. What's he got to be, like 80?
I'll have to invite him sailing on the Petaluma River. It's a great place to sail.
It is great. Now, I know you wanted to talk about sailing lifestyle today.
Yeah. I was just thinking about all the different oceans and seas that I've sailed in, and what the different characteristics are of the different places. Why don't you ask me what you like about that?
Well, you've sailed on a how do you say it? Dhow?
Right. So if we were to actually, the Indian Ocean is really interesting because it's green, and when you get close to the shore. So Zanzibar, which is one of the international ports that for thousands of years these wooden boats called dhows, D-H-O-W is the how you spell it, which basically just means wooden boat. These boats sail out of the Stone Town and so forth, and it's usually the fishermen who are using the boats, and then they also do some cargo, they have some big cargo ships that are maybe 100-plus feet long, and the fishing boats can be 14 feet to 40 feet, but usually the small ones. And so, it's just the lifestyle that's been there forever. There's absolutely no infrastructure for bareboat sailing, and bareboat sailing is where you charter a boat and then go out on a boat as your own captain. So when I was sailing in Zanzibar, I had to make friends with a captain. I was introduced by someone, the concierge of the Hotel Serena there, who had grown up with a captain. And basically, he took me out and taught me how to sail the dhow, and we established a relationship so that when I had people coming in from America, that he would teach them how to sail. And they don't do that there, so it was a very, very unique thing. But it's a beautiful spot. You've got the water is clear all the way down to 30, 40 feet, as you can see when you're sailing near the shore. And the dhows have very shallow bottoms, so they just can beach them. They can just bring them right up on the beach and land them there, and you can get off, or they might go out a little bit further and you come on a skiff to shore. It's quite fun.
I think people should know about you too, and I think this gives you a lot of legitimacy. Is they hear about you in Zanzibar and going to the King's coronation and the In and Out Club and selling pianos to Nick Nurse. I think people think you might have grown up punting down the cam with a silver spoon in your mouth. You grew up on the dirty Delta. You were doing some real sailing, weren't you?
Well, that's not sailing. I grew up as the daughter of a power boater.
Right? that's real sailing to me.
My dad likes to keep his gin level, and he likes to take we call him Leadfoot Lyle for a reason, because he likes to go fast.
Leadfoot Lyle is my favorite country singer too.
Oh, is there a Leadfoot Lyle, really?
I made it up. Karen,
tell
us more about, as we, most municipal towns, even in Texas, it is illegal to discharge your weapon without a permit. So when you go out on the bay and you're lighting off these fake cannons, you were doing that on the Lady Washington, the Hawaiian Chieftain. But did you have to clear it with the fire department or something first?
Well, the city of San Francisco is full of regulations. And part of the reason for that is because there's so many people right there close to the water that if there's any loud sound that might sound like a gunshot or cannon or whatever, then the police are going to get all these phone calls from alarmed citizens saying, oh, we're being attacked, right? And so they have to do a permit. And so the Lady Washington Hawaiian Chieftain, I did a couple, probably three cannon battles, before she went up north to Aberdeen, where she's going to be having some hauled out and some repairs done sometime this year. Anyway, we did some cannon battles, and so I had to get permission from the police department, and it had been so long since they'd issued this permit that they had to do historical research and be able to, and they actually had to create a new permit. And I remember the person who was the officer, I mean, I called in a few favors to get this happening because it wasn't easy. And so I wrote to the chief of police and gave him an introduction to the project, and then he let his captains know, and it got down to the person who was making the permit, and you know, she was just so excited to do this. They thought this was just a big kick. But I had to specify exactly where the cannons would go off, no projectiles. We took the Lady Washington under the East Bay Bridge and fired the cannon there. So it really is the original cannons that they had, you know, like in that time of the 1700s on the tall ship. And they do it with gunpowder and light it in the same manner. It's just that it doesn't have a cannonball in it. So, but it makes a huge sound and makes some boat, you know, some smoke. And we did one on the after finishing this cannon battle off the end of Pier 39, and then at another time at the beginning of the opening day on the bay for their 100th anniversary. We were coming back under the East Bay Bridge, and I said, "Can we let one off here?" And it was within the permit, so we did. And it was like this big echo that just went back and forth under the bridge. It was probably I don't know if the cars could hear it, but it was really fun.
Yeah, I remember in the 70s, my friend's dad, who had a boat, had a little teeny toy cannon, if you like, at the bow. And every once in a while, he'd light it off, and it was loud as hell. I guess he was against regulations at the time. But you know what's something interesting? As a history buff, military history buff, one of the reasons that Lord Horatio Nelson was able to win the Battle of Trafalgar against the French and Spanish fleets is that the French and Spanish man-o-wars, which were bigger and had more cannons, they had fuses. So if you think about bobbing up and down, you have to light a fuse and wait, whereas the British had, as we would say, fire in the hole. You would just directly put the fire down on the breech of the cannon, and it would ignite, so you could fire immediately instead of having to light a fuse and then wait for it.
Right, right. I mean, timing is everything, especially. But, you know, things are moving a lot slower than if you have ships firing at each other. They don't move super fast.
I just mean like, you know, bobbing up and down, though.
Well, that's true. I mean, it might be a little bit of a, it depends upon the sea conditions.
It depends how close you are.
Yes, 11-foot seas or above or something like that, then timing the waves, I mean, they would actually have to pay attention to where the troughs are and where the cannon would be set and how long it would take to be able to make the cannonball hit the hull of the other ship, right? Mm-hmm. So it's that's possible. I mean, actually, if you spend a lot of time on sea, you pay attention to the distance between the swells and time it, you know, when you're at the helm especially, mm-hmm. because you have to sometimes angle across the waves and, you know, position the sails exactly in the right position that, you know, because you're going down those troughs, you don't want to go over a crest and go straight down. You want to go at an angle. So a lot of it depends upon the conditions of the sea.
It's sort of like, as an aside, Crazy Horse would always get off his horse to shoot because he didn't want to be bobbing up and down. I just thought I'd throw that in. Also,
right.
And the people should know, I'm calling it the Dirty Delta, not because of Antioch, Pittsburgh, and Stockton, whatever. I'm calling it because it's muddy waters. And if you look at a satellite photo, San Pablo Bay, which is north of the Richmond Santa Fe Bridge, is all brown. And San Francisco Bay, which is south of that bridge, is usually clear. And I think people think that the water's coming in, but it's going out. And in those muddy waters, when I would fish every once in a while, on my dad's friend's boat, we would go for sturgeon. And that was sort of the thing that we would get in those dirty, delta, silty waters.
Right. And have you ever ended up in the water with that mud on you, by the way?
Thank goodness, no.
I have. No, it was my first time sailing on a little boat, and I was there for a lesson. It was actually in the San Francisco Bay Area in the Berkeley, the Cal Sailing Club. And I'd been sailing on power boats, which are much more stable than sailboats in a lot of ways. You know, they just have more breadth and so forth. And there was this 14-foot dinghy, and my my teacher was so good at being able to just step on the bow and walk around it, you know, even without a centerboard, and he wouldn't fall because he just had the sea legs. And I didn't know about the difference between power boats and sailing, so I thought, oh, I can do that, and I just stepped on the bow and went straight into the water. And it was cold, it was 55 degrees, and I had my fallies on, and so I was in, there were 6 feet of mud there at the dock.
Oh, so it's dangerous.
Went straight into the mud. It was, yeah, it was, I mean, I didn't go all the way down 6 feet, but I definitely was covered with mud when I came out. It's kind of like a sticky kind of mud. It's not a great, I mean, it's so much different than sailing in the British Virgin Islands when you can jump off the back of your boat and you've got this clear water and you can see 30 feet down and it's this light, beautiful blue. I mean, it's just very, very different.
Well, speaking of,
on top of the water.
Yeah.
Here in the bay.
Right. And speaking of flying into Seattle, what do you love about Seattle International Airport, Karen?
Well, you know, I find it so intriguing that Seattle is this international city, and so you've got all these tall buildings in downtown Seattle, and you can fly into the airport, rent a car, go out and stay at one of those beautiful hotels, and walk to the Port of Seattle. They have these little areas where they have restaurants and things, and walkways along the path there, and they really do have a nightlife there. I mean, there's a lot of people who come, you know, to enjoy that. And then you can drive all the way out, maybe a couple hours through this beautiful countryside to Aberdeen, which is one of the historic seaports that actually the Lady Washington calls its home port, and see this, you know, this rural area that is just preserved, and you know, and along our Pacific coast, where the tall ships, you know, came, and there's history all up along the Pacific coast from all the journeys and the trade, you know, the trade that was done with the Indians, as well as things brought from the East Coast. So it's you just get such, in with such a short period of time, you see such contrast. It's really great.
Well, I should mention that this show is brought to you by Grays Harbor Historical Seaport, the Port of Seattle in the state of Washington. Fly into Seattle International Airport on your next trip and visit the Port of Seattle and her historic seaports. Karen, always nice playing or talking a little sailing with you, and we're going to hear a song called With Wings that you had a piece of, huh?
I did. I wrote the lyrics and produced it.
How cool is that? All right, we'll catch up with you next week.
Okay, sounds good.
Karen Lyle, SailsportTalk.com, and here is that song, With Wings. Mm-hmm.